Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Ecosystemic Futures Podcast. I'm your host, Diane Finkhausen, former GE business leader and now founder and CEO of ShushaWorks, a global advisory firm helping organizations and nations navigate ecosystemic transformation. As our world is increasingly digital and interconnected, ecosystemic models are reshaping society, industry, economy, and policy, and reframing how we build for resilient futures. In this series brought to you by ShushaWorks in collaboration with NASA Convergent Aeronautics Solutions Project, we're exploring how these ecosystemic models and impacts are reshaping the future of work. And this is the third of three episodes with world-renowned future of work and workplace expert Kate Lister. We're investigating the highly charged landscape for the future of work. And in this episode, we're going to be focusing on some potential solution pathways. In the first episode, we set up the landscape of change and how some of the shifts are beginning to present themselves for society, industry, and our economy. In the second episode, we look forward and shaped out kind of the potential future state scenarios that those shifts could begin informing. And in this episode, we're going to be focusing in on how we shape the future the way we want, the future that we want, how we begin to design for greater ecosystemic wellness and more beneficial outcomes for society. So for the episode again today, my co-host is Vikram Shyam. Welcome, Vic.
Thanks, Dan. Hey, I'm Vic. Been at NASA for 15 years and currently the futurist for the Convergent Aeronautics Solutions Project. I've got a background in anthropology and biomimicry foresight, and looking forward to talking solutions for the future of workplace.
Awesome. Thanks, Vic. And we're super excited to welcome Kate Lister back today. Kate Lister is the president of Global Workplace Analytics. Kate, welcome back.
It's great to be here again.
Kate, for our listeners that are just joining in today, maybe share a little bit about your work and your background.
Sure. I've spent about the last two decades helping organizations think about the kinds of things that they're actually just starting to face in the last two, about how to adopt and how to optimize and how to measure the results of a dispersed workforce, distributed workforce. Our work is informed by a database of over 7,000 documents. I'm a bit of a data nut. Documents like case studies, academic papers, books, news items, sort of everything we can put our eyeballs on that has to do with these workplace and workforce and work issues. So that when we're talking to a C-suite, we do it with authority and we do it with data that's backed up by facts.
Yeah, fantastic. That's a great point, Kate. And for our listeners, just add a quick note, we'll provide to some of the best in that reference library. We'll drop some links into the episode notes. So if our listeners want to read up more, you know, in the margins of their day, we'll provide some great references in the episode notes below. But Kate, again, thank you so much for joining us. In the previous conversations, we've touched upon so much, right? But it's been super clear that the ways in which we work are not kind of operating in a vacuum, right? The future of work, the today of work, really has significant implications for innovation, productivity, culture, real estate, and in fact, the future of cities, which you've made so clear in our previous conversations. What are you seeing in your vast research around the trends and the patterns and the implications for the future of work and some of those more likely pathways that we're seeing unfold? And maybe that has some kind of unique characteristics depending on the region, right? So Europe has a little bit different profile, say, than North America, but those pathways that we see unfolding in the future of work, what are some of the meta trends that you're seeing shape that?
Yeah, just I want to touch on your comment about differences around the world. Even prior to the pandemic, the reason for adopting remote work was very different, and it's kind of accelerated those differences in some ways. Speaking in Ireland in a couple of weeks, and in Ireland, the problem they have is that talent has to leave the small cities, the small town, in order to get a good job. So there's sort of this brain drain and this economic drain in the towns. So they're looking to full remote. In China, employees have to leave, or people have to leave their small villages and their elders, which, you know, is something they care very deeply about, to go into these big cities and have to find jobs. In Islamic countries, they look to remote work to reduce gender mixing. So, you know, there's all kinds of reasons and differences across the countries. But, you know, sort of, if you sort of look at the how, I think one of the positive outcomes of the pandemic was that it lofted these conversations to the C-suite of organizations and to community planners. So before the pandemic, we had, you know, these conversations about work-life balance and about optimizing talent and about talent shortages and about allowing people to work flexibly coming out of all different places. They would come out of real estate because they wanted to reduce their real estate costs. They'd come out of HR because they were worried about the talent shortages and more about people and, you know, those kinds of things. So we kind of fractioned these efforts, and it was being dealt with as sort of the tactical solution to the problem du jour, rather than a strategic change. And so now that the C-suite is saying, hey, wait a minute, we've got these buildings that are 80% empty, and we've tested this new way of working, and, you know, hey, we kind of learned some good things. Now that it's becoming a top-down solution and a more integrated solution, and even a more integrated solution at the city, state, and country level. You know, they tested these models. Not only they, but I was surprised at the result that the world did go on, that productivity actually increased, that employee engagement increased, that employee culture got better, that there were some positive things for innovation in terms of the creativity part of innovation. I mean, that's not to say that there aren't some problems, and we're still working through some of those problems, but the former head of the USGSA, when they were first experimenting with what they call telework, had a line that I absolutely love. Telework didn't create management problems, it revealed them. And I would go as far to say it also revealed societal problems. So, you know, I think those are all good things. One of the things that it revealed was the whole diversity and inclusion issue, that people who were working remotely were kind of second-class citizens. And when the pandemic first started and we were all the same, you know, egalitarian size square on a screen, the people that had felt like they were outsiders suddenly felt like they were more inside. And that's the kind of thing that we need to continue and need to grasp going forward. How we hold meetings, how we make them inclusive. We've got more used to using polls and more used to using asynchronous documents and chat. And that's great for people that, you know, aren't the ones that want to speak up in the meeting. More than half of the population are introverts, and I'm one of them. We don't think as quickly. We don't act as quickly. We won't speak as quickly as extroverts. So having that extra time or that extra way to contribute has dramatically and can dramatically increase and diversify the thought pool. Being able to hire from anywhere and everywhere is going to create a different kind of diversity and more diversity and, again, expand that thought pool. But we've got to sort of take those good lessons and take them forward. You know, it exposed how just bloody awful offices were for the people that used them and for the work that they were doing there. And now we're talking about this more human-centric approach, this employee experience approach. Greater attention is being paid to employee health and wellness and what they want. And not necessarily out of altruism, but because organizations are realizing that you bring your whole self to work, right? If it's not going well for you financially, or you're having problems at home, or, you know, whatever the issues may be, they come with you. And the whole stress pandemic or epidemic that has been accelerating is all part of that. It forced us to move forward in a lot of ways that were stalled in terms of digitization, in terms of moving things to the cloud. These were all things that started before the pandemic, but it accelerated. You know, didn't create these problems, it revealed them. It revealed security issues in distributed work and within work. And, you know, I think it brought us closer to this conversation about what people really need. And we've known since the 50s, you know, autonomy, purpose, belonging, mastery, that's what they want. And if people really want to get, organizations really want to get the best out of the people, those are the things that they need to focus on. And I think it's the pandemic sort of brought a lot of this to the surface.
Yeah, I love that quote. I've heard you mention that quote before, and I love it. I keep coming back to that. And it's so true. I am, you know, this is an overgeneralization, but I kind of equate kind of the work pre-pandemic is, you know, the world had kind of business and work kind of on the assembly line, really, for generations, right? Post the Industrial Revolution, it was a focus on productivity and kind of ratcheting down the, you know, the throughput and the efficiency and reducing scrap. And really, regardless of sector, regardless of profession, the mental map for work was basically that assembly line. How can you increase productivity and throughput? And what you're describing here is just a massive unlock for humanity and the redesign of work, workforce, and workplace. We just, some personal experiences when I was creating our ecosystem at GE, where we were undertaking digital transformation, which was a massive shift for us. We ran some experiments by putting our employee base on a platform. And we used that platform, really the structure of it was greater connectivity, right, and accessibility. But the utility of it was really giving our teams greater voice and choice in how they engaged, where they engaged, when they engaged. And just the level of innovation, the level of productivity, and the level of kind of engagement, because you allowed them to, with that kind of structure, they could bring their interests, their expertise, their capacity to bear in ways that were more formed by their choice and was really matching the organizational need. So we shifted from really workforce to community. And it sounds simple, but it was highly nuanced and it was incredibly kind of transformational for the organization and the individuals within. And Vic, your thoughts?
Yeah, I actually have some tangential thoughts here. So Kate brought up some cultural trends that you noticed across, say, in China and the Islamic world. And Van, you were bringing up different trends of planning for the future and such, right, these scenarios. How much of this planning involves looking backwards a bit? So if you think about different operating models that we've used culturally through time. So in education, for example, there's these community-based education systems that were used in ancient cultures. Are there work practices that we can learn from in our history that may be applicable now? Obviously not with the high-tech part, maybe, but the way that we train people, the way that we give them a sense of belonging, you mentioned Maslow's hierarchy. Is there such a backward-looking perspective?
I think if we look back several decades to the science of what motivates people, Maslow, Herzberg, and actually pay attention to it, you know, that's exactly what Diane was just talking about, autonomy, mastery, and purpose. Give people the ability to be their best because that's what they really want to be. Diane, I have this, I think you probably inspired it. I have this vision where I'm sitting and I'm working on a PowerPoint presentation and the keyboard shakes. And it says, you know what? You're not very good at this. And did you know that we have 10 vetted contractors that could be doing this for you and just click a button and you can hire one of them? And did you know that Vic, your colleague, just did a paper on this or just did a presentation on this? Maybe you should consult him. I mean, what if we knew what everybody did in an organization, what they liked to do, what they didn't like to do? And I know this is what you're talking about. This is your sweet spot. And I'm just absolutely enamored with it. And we got to do what we want to do, what we're good at most of the time. I mean, right now, 70 to 80% of the time, we're doing stuff that we don't like and we're not good at. That is not optimal. And it's probably not sustainable.
Yeah, he's so right, Kate. Right. The way I kind of view the world right now, that the eternal optimist in me, right, sees this massive kind of advancement in technology, right, that could help us, right, with the right design, both basically optimize organizational performance, but also elevate the human experience, right? But that requires a really good orchestration and design, intentional design. And so many of us are just running with our hair on fire, right? If you have a day job, if we're honest, you have 3-day jobs, right? So folks are just running with their hair on fire and kind of reacting to the market shifts and the shocks and the waves of innovation. It is so important for us to step back, right? And to be very intentional and thoughtful about the way we design work, workforce, and workplace. And Kate, to your point, you're so good at reminding us that it really has implications for the broader ecosystem, right? So it's not just the future of work. It's also the future of cities. It's the future of education, right? There are so many future ofs that are inextricably linked, so that as we're making these choices, these design choices, we need to understand how they ripple through these other related ecosystems so that in aggregate, not on average, but so that we're designing for greater ecosystemic wellness.
One more quick question here. So we brought up planning for the future resilience a few times, and we mentioned climate change. So I'm wondering, what are the big things that companies, organizations, people need to prepare for in the future, considering climate change? And we know that there's going to be things like shortages, migrations. There's going to be need to replan our cities. You talked about the future of cities. People are now talking about these recyclable buildings and such. What are some of these other major things that we need to look out for trend-wise in terms of climate change and its impact?
Well, certainly climate change is one. Human health, I think, is another. Somebody who is depressed loses 56 days, the equivalent of 56 days a year in productivity. It doesn't show. They're still there, but the light's not on, right? We've got to start dealing with the mental health issues. We've got to start to actually do something about re-educating the population and continually re-educating. I mean, companies actually reduced training during the pandemic. And even before that, they had started to reduce training with full knowledge that we've got this skill shortage and talent shortage just hanging out there. As Diane said, we've just got to be intentional about things and bring these things together. But more than anything, we've got to be resilient. We've got to learn to deal with change. Pandemic came out of nowhere. Who would have suspected? ChatGPT came out of nowhere. Who would have suspected? There are going to be many more things like that happen in the future. And the only way to be ready for them is to practice resilience.
So true. And really, resilience is, if you can point to one kind of strategic arc for all of these conversations that we've been having, it's this renewed focus on resilience. We have to come together as a global community, right? As a network of ecosystems, and be very intentional, very thoughtful, and build systems of trust and trustable systems so that we do maintain that resilience at the individual level, at the organizational level, and at the national level. So, Kate, you've given us so much to think about, and these episodes are just, they're flying by. But with that, we're going to have to wrap. For our listeners, please do check those show notes below. We're going to provide some additional reference material for you if you're interested in this topic. And of course, you can always reach out to our team here, and that if you want to continue the conversation. Kate, if you could leave our listeners with just one or two key things to keep in mind for, in the spirit of designing for greater ecosystemic wellness for the future of work, workforce, and workplace design, what would you have our listeners keep in mind?
We have to be open to change. I see a lot of companies, for example, that won't try new technology because it's from a small company. Well, excuse me, Amazon was a small company at one point too. You know, we've just got to learn to try things, pilot them, and measure results. Don't just, you know, continue to do something without understanding whether or not it has moved the needle on the kinds of things that you're trying to move the needle on.
Yeah, great points. We recommend organizations set up learning objectives and structured experiments, assumptions, and hypotheses as they're testing those, so that, to your point, they're not losing the learnings as they're moving through those. Kate, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Vic, always appreciate your perspective in these conversations. So for our listeners, if you just joined us for this episode, please be sure to catch up on the other two conversations that we've had with Kate Lister, where we explored some of the more important forces of change in the future of work, workforce, and workplace ecosystems. And do join us for the Ecosystemic Futures podcast series brought to you by ShushumWorks in collaboration with NASA Convergent Aeronautics Solutions Project, in which we'll continue exploring topics with world-class experts who are leading in the arenas of foresight, development, and design for greater ecosystemic wellness. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or your favorite place to access those podcasts, and you can always learn more at ShushumWorks.com. Thanks, everyone.